Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at WDIY.org. Good evening. Welcome to the show. Today is November 11, 2020, Veterans Day. Thank you to all of our veterans. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing down at 29,397, the NASDAQ up at 11,786, and the S&P up at 3,572. Our topic tonight is considerations in real estate investing. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. Well, in talking about the considerations in real estate investing, I brought in a guest, and my guest this evening is David Elowich, CFP professional. He is a financial advisor at Elowich III LLC, offering comprehensive financial planning services through Lincoln Financial Advisors Corporation, a broker-dealer, member SIPC, and registered investment advisor. As a third-generation member of the firm, David takes great pride in the family legacy of integrity and commitment to clients. David focuses on the planning process to help clients achieve their financial goals. His clientele includes baby boomers looking for guidance to secure a sound retirement plan, as well as young professionals and business owners seeking to protect their family and build the foundation for a sound financial future. David is the treasurer of the Muhlenberg College Board of Associates, and he is past president of both the Estate Planning Council of the Lehigh Valley and the Lehigh Valley Consortium of Professional Organizations. And Dave is a returning guest. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hey, Lori, thanks for having me back.
Thank you for being here. I'm excited to have you. We go way back, and Dave and I met, I think, through the Estate Planning Council, didn't we, Dave?
Absolutely. It was just about 10 years ago, and the last time you had me on, I was saying hi to my first child, maybe it was less than 10 years ago, who is 9 tonight, and I promised that I would say hi to Harper and her sister Meredith, so wanted to make sure we got that in before we get to some other things.
Wow, that's right, Dave. I can't believe your kids have gotten so grown up, I'll say. Well, it's exciting to talk to you always, Dave. I do enjoy it. And tonight, this considerations in real estate investing. So I know you've taken a great interest in this area, so I thought we could run through some of the high-level considerations. It is a question, you know, I think advisors are getting often these days, like, where else can I go with maybe my investing? How can I diversify? So real estate is a big question. So can we start with that question? Why are people interested in getting into real estate?
Absolutely. There's a number of reasons. And as we, you know, as we talk through a number of issues tonight, I think it's important to keep in mind that real estate investing can be great in a number of ways, but folks are best served when they understand how it interfaces with their overall plans and their overall priorities, whether it's a small part, large part, or the only part of their investing portfolio. There are other ways to think about, or important ways to think about, how it interfaces with other aspects of your life and your priorities. So that's just something I would suggest keeping in mind as you think about this in our conversation and for our listeners who are really thinking about where real estate does fit or may fit in their financial life.
Well, maybe you could go through some examples of that as well, too.
Sure. Absolutely. The first thing that comes to mind and has come in a lot of conversations in my practice is the idea of using real estate as supplemental income.
Mm-hmm.
When done right, and everything we're talking about, like so much in the financial world, has the caveat that it has to be done well and it's not risk-free, but it can generate supplemental income to enhance the other areas in your life that you're generating income, or potentially to replace a 9-to-5 job. And that is oftentimes the goal of folks who are looking to get into it. They see that it can become a passive income stream, which can allow them to some degree get out of the rat race of having to, punch a clock or, run a business that could be very demanding.
Mm-hmm.
Another area that we see is folks will use it to fund a retirement in a similar way that as they're earning during their working years, they can use a real estate portfolio to generate income that will allow them to retire to the lifestyle to which they aspire.
Mm-hmm. So real quick on that one. So while they're, working and have a job, if they may have invested in real estate during that period of time, the goal in that situation may be that when they retire, now it is generating more of that positive cash flow in those retirement years, kind of like a almost as if it's a pension or some kind of fixed income that they can count on?
Absolutely. It can definitely be designed that way, particularly if you use financing to acquire the asset. So you can think in terms of the fact that you would leverage your money or take some of your money as a down payment, which most people are familiar with,
mm-hmm.
and let the bank pay for the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And if you structure the math right, your tenants, whether they're commercial tenants or residential tenants, as they pay rent, can be that rent can be designed to pay most, all, or even more than the debt service, the mortgage payment. And if you do that, you can plan out that you'll bring the debt down to zero in retirement and then turn that on as an income stream to retire on. And, of course, you can design things to turn that income stream earlier or later.
Okay.
Then
that's good. And we'll probably go into more depth on that as well. And I should probably let you continue on your kind of overview of how this fits into your life. So you mentioned that it could be supplemental income. It could replace, a 9-to-5 job if people feel hemmed in and want more freedom, or funding retirement. What other kinds of uses might this
sure.
work with?
And the other short-term thing that I've heard folks do, I know some people who use this as their college funding plan, where they'll lay out the cash for the period of time while they have young children, and really design it in such a way that they would expect the cash flow will generate substantial income for them to cover education costs or other shorter-term needs.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece of the economics with real estate that generally benefits you, and I say generally because there are certainly periods where it is not the case, but over the long period of time, real estate appreciates. So you have this mechanism where the cash flow of the asset is paying down the debt. In many ways, it's paying for itself, or paying for itself in large part, and the underlying value grows. And while that happens, the value on your balance sheet grows, and now you're accumulating larger amounts of wealth, whether or not the cash flow is important to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows, as folks are successful with that, that gives you all kinds of opportunities for generational planning. Particularly when you think about how the tax code works, at least currently, that there's a benefit in holding real estate till the end of one's life, because
mm-hmm.
if it has grown in value, assets or property that you've held for years and years, in our current tax code, if you go and sell it, you have to pay capital gains tax.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly as you know, if it passes to the next generation as a result of death, you get a step up in basis, and depending on the other pieces of your life and how your estate is structured, it can be all close to a tax-free transfer. So mm-hmm. it can be a very strong asset if generational or legacy planning is a priority.
Yeah, lots of aspects to this. Lots of aspects to this. So as we go through the show, I think we can talk more about some of those tax benefits and what go into a little bit more in depth of what you mean, the power of leverage. Some people do naturally understand that, but maybe for folks who are not real estate investors at this point, even to the point of not even having their own home, we can explain what that means a little bit more. So when we come back from this next break, we will continue our discussion with David Elowich of Elowich 3 LLC and our conversation on considerations in real estate investing. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous, sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on 88.1 FM WDIY. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at wdiy.org under Public Affairs. Just scroll down for Your Financial Choices. We're talking this evening with David Elowich, CFP professional and financial advisor at Elowich 3 LLC, and we are talking about considerations in real estate investing. So, Dave, we've kind of set up the show to... I'm getting a little feedback, Dave.
Okay, can you hear?
Yes. Okay. So we're talking a little bit about the reasons that people are interested in getting into real estate. We talked about the supplemental income, the replacing a 9-to-5 job, funding retirement, maybe some short-term needs and long-term wealth accumulation, and even generational planning, which is all very interesting. So cash flow would seem to be a lot of the driver there, and it could provide that future appreciation as well, which is different than cash flow. But so what are some of the investment reasons to consider in real estate investing?
From an investment standpoint, when we think in terms of a traditional portfolio of stocks and bonds, the term that comes to mind with real estate is it tends to be a non-correlated asset.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fancy industry term for saying that when the market zigs, real estate will likely zag. So my real estate investor clients who own direct property, particularly in the spring when we had some real major volatility, were pretty confident that the value of their real estate was going to hold, particularly if they were in the fortunate position, as most of them were, that they had financially stable tenants.
Mm-hmm.
And so while the securities markets had substantial losses, their real estate maintains its value and they maintain their cash flow. So it can be, from the portfolio standpoint, it can be an asset that when added in gives you a better risk return profile.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily that it returns more, but it goes up and down at different times, which means that you don't have as much, potentially not as much loss in a down market.
Right. It smooths out the volatility. If you look at the portfolio overall, whether it's stocks, bonds, and your real estate investing. So that diversification hopefully smooths out volatility a little bit.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And again, if real estate is being utilized for that purpose of diversification, it is essential to understand how you're doing it, how much makes sense to fit in. If it's really designed to smooth out a stock bond portfolio, you know, you probably don't want to be much more than 5 or 10% allocated to that space.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, you probably want the assistance of a qualified investment professional who can really help you understand how a particular real estate investment will interact with the risk-return profile of your other investments.
Right, because just like not all stocks are the same, not all bonds are the same, not all real estate's the same either. So I think anyone who's considering this really needs to go in informed and a little bit, there's a word I'd like to, it's not skeptical, but it's a word where you kind of go in questioning to, you know, root out the best answers and the best kind of position for you. Because, you know, we had Carrie Ward on, you know, several weeks ago talking about residential real estate, commercial real estate. They could be very different animals. So I agree with you that if you're going to venture into something like this, it helps, it, especially if you haven't done it before, to work with someone who kind of has run this race before. So let's talk a little bit, if you can, about some of the tax benefits, Dave, because one thing I hear often is people who haven't done real estate before, they'll often say, well, you know, I want to do real estate because you get, you know, this deduction on your tax return and you get to use this loss. And so maybe you could address that a little bit and I can add if needed.
Yeah, please. And I probably will lean on your CPA background a little bit here. But as you mentioned at the top of the show, I'm third generation, so I'm gonna take the opportunity to quote my grandfather, who said that tax deductions should not drive your decisions until the tax rate exceeds 100%. And what I mean by that, you know, and the other kind of thing we'll say to clients is we do not want the tax tail to wag the dog of your other priorities.
Right.
So. With that said, some of the great power in using real estate as for a cash flow purposes is that you can take depreciation on the assets. So you can take the value of your property, and it's divided, and here I will lean on you, it's divided over how many years, Lori?
Well, if it's residential rental, it's 27 and a half years.
So you basically take a little bit less than 4% of the value of the asset. And that's just written again as depreciation that can be written against the income, the passive income from your real estate investments, which can mean that the tax nature of that income is much, or the taxability of that income is much less.
Mm-hmm.
So the term we use, the tax equivalent yield, is higher, where you say, well, maybe you've generated a deal that's paying 6 or 7%, but when you look at your tax savings, you could actually be realizing a net of tax benefit of 9 or 10%. So it's generating that strong income stream to support your goals and your lifestyle, but it's doing so at a much more tax advantage basis relative to other things that you might do to generate the income.
Yeah, I'll tag on to that. So depreciation is a deduction the IRS gives people, and so it does encourage investment into real estate, which is, you know, putting back into the community and things like that. So this little extra deduction, it's not like the utility bill that you actually pay. It's not the real estate taxes that you actually pay. It's depreciation. It's a calculation, an IRS phenomenon that says you can take a deduction for the value of the real estate less the land, because the land we can't depreciate. So if you have a building and land that's worth $400,000 and the land and the building is $275,000 divided by 27 and a half years, and I'm doing this quickly and I usually use a calculator, let's say it's $10,000 of depreciation. That's what Dave's talking about. It's a deduction on the tax return against the gross revenue that's coming in on those rents. You still get those other deductions. Just a little asterisk here, and this is why I like people to make sure they understand what they're walking into, is that depreciation reduces your cost basis over time. So as I said, if the building was $275,000 and I have $10,000 of depreciation, the basis in my building is now 265, and it can continue to go down. And at 27 and a half years, I will have depreciated the entire building. And if I then sell it, I have a gain on that full gain. And there is some recapture on that at a different tax rate, so I'm not going to get into that now. But you have to understand the next domino that's going to go with these benefits. And one other thing is if your income is too high, the IRS limits how much of a loss you could take on your rental property. So for people who are making, you know, $300,000 and you generate a rental loss, the IRS isn't going to let you take that currently if it's a passive investment, and it would just be suspended and carried forward. So there are a lot of nuances to this, but, you know, if all the ducks align in the right row, this can, you know, work for a number of people. We're talking with Dave Elowich this evening. Dave is a CFP professional at Elowich 3 LLC. We're talking about considerations in real estate investing. And if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We are back with my guest, Dave Elowich, and we are discussing considerations in real estate investing and just talking about some of the benefits. And one of those is depreciation, which helps bring down that income that you're recognizing currently. What else do you want to talk about for that, Dave, or do you want to move on to talking about the power of leverage and expanding?
Well, where you finished off, and I think you was spot on that, you know, there are so many moving parts to understand, as you say, the next domino to fall. There are real opportunities to take advantage of its passive nature. If you have on your books, if you're falling victim to passive losses in the past that you can't unlock, this can make that income even stronger. The other point is there are opportunities if you want to change your real estate holdings. There's a section of the tax code that, where you can do what's called a 1031 exchange, a like-kind exchange. You need to follow the rules. If anyone is contemplating this, speak with a qualified accountant, qualified attorney. There needs to be someone who's actually called a qualified intermediary involved in the transaction. This is one of those no-do-over areas of the Internal Revenue Code. But if you want to update or change one piece of real estate for another, you can actually transfer over your original basis so you can do so without a gain while upgrading and enhancing your real estate. But again, really, really want to have solid advice from a professional who's been through that before, preferably multiple times.
Right. You can't do it and then walk into your accountant and say, oh, I want to apply that 1031. It's too late. You have to do it, you know, before you take any action. You basically can't take a check in hand, and that's why you need the qualified intermediary. So good point there, Dave. Let's talk about leverage for a little bit.
Sure. So leverage, maybe that's the fancy term that we use for debt. Mm-hmm. But the reason that we say leverage is that you can use debt or financing from a bank or other institution to make the power of whatever capital you're bringing to bear for a real estate investment larger. You can perhaps take $100,000 in cash, borrow $400,000. Now you have acquired a $500,000 asset with $100,000 of cash to get it. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that comes with, when you do that, you're booking a debt of $400,000. But if you do this right, the cash flow that's being generated from that investment should more than cover that mortgage payment or whatever your debt service is. So that's where the real power comes into this. But for folks who haven't looked at this before, banks treat investment deals very differently than they do a residential mortgage. Your rates may not be as strong. Your ability to get the terms that you want might not be as great. So you really want to make sure you're shopping around and looking for the right lenders, because traditional loans are not always available depending on your deal.
Right, and sometimes the rates are higher.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. And particularly if you're doing there's many different ways to make money in real estate. One of them is you'll hear the term a lot, fix and flip. And I'll take a step back. When I realized that this was an area that I really wanted to educate myself so I could serve my clients, I spent a long time talking to a number of really successful real estate investors, and there's a number of sharp folks in the Lehigh Valley, and most of them are perfectly happy to help someone who's trying to learn about their business or want to get in. There's a lot of great resources for folks who want to, you know, learn how to do this well and avoid some pitfalls. So you learn terms like this fix and flip idea, where I'll buy a house, it hasn't been taken care of in years, it's falling apart, maybe I can get it for $30,000 or $40,000, have a repair budget of $60,000 or $70,000, so I put $100,000 in, and when I do all those things, maybe I can sell it for $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
You'll notice that I use the word maybe a lot in there. Now, you had Carrie Ward on the show a few weeks ago. One of our local professionals who knows the stuff inside and out. So someone like her on your team can look at it and say, no, that's going to cost you twice as much and you're going to get half what you think on the sale. Or she can say, you're exactly right, and that's the right budget, and it can really work. Someone who knows the market.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a deal that's structured really well, but it's an asset that a bank wouldn't want to, you know, use as security because it's like, well, in its current form, we might not get our money back.
Mm-hmm.
There are a series of lenders that are called hard money lenders. And what makes them unique is rather than underwriting your ability to pay back, they're actually underwriting the deal mm-hmm. and the asset. So they may give you the money to acquire that fix and flip, but it's going to be at a substantially higher rate because it's a riskier spot in the capital market. And, again, it can work, but you have to understand what your cost of capital is as you're building out the economics of your deal to say, you know, that's got to be one of your costs. And maybe you're doing one where you're gonna go and you're going to fix it, but then you decide you're going to hold on to it. You're not going to just turn and sell it on the open market. If you're going to do that, very often the structure that you'll see is people will use hard money to acquire the asset. They'll do all the work and the repairs so that they'll increase the value of the asset. They'll get it tenanted so that it's generating cash flow. And from there, now it becomes more attractive for a traditional lender, mm-hmm. and you'll refinance at mm-hmm. the tail end of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
That can work really well, but you got to have your ducks in a row. You got to have contractors that are going to work quickly, because if you have expensive capital on a deal, those delays are expensive because the clock is ticking at that really high interest rate.
You know, Dave, I had someone come in and talk to me way after the fact, and they had listened to a radio show that was about real estate investing and had encouraged people to, you know, take out second mortgages on their home, buy into this real estate. They had people who come in and contractors who do all the work, and, you know, they're just going to help you along the way. And these folks just had not done their research. They leveraged as far as they could go with their own home, and the properties were not in good areas. The contractors were way overpriced, part of this, you know, spiel that someone had sold to them. And they were out so much money, and the tenants, it wasn't in a good area, the tenants didn't last, and, you know, they just were heartbroken because they had, you know, not done it right. So it is so important to think about if someone has not done this before, to think about it. I have also had very successful clients who, you know, pinpoint the right area, the demographics, and have great tenants, and the values go up as well. So that's all good. One last thing before our next break I wanted to add to, Dave, is right now for folks with estate planning, if the federal exemption goes down, and I'm talking high net worth people who may end up having some kind of estate tax exposure if the exemption goes back down in, you know, subsequent administrations here, or eventually in the event, you know, we have to raise taxes for, you know, the debt load and everything, if federal exemptions come back down. If people want to do estate planning, you can make some loans to your children if they want to do some of this. It is an opportunity. That's another way to get financing. People forget that you can, you know, swing a loan to your kids as long as you're using the proper federal rates and, you know, recognizing the interest income, et cetera. So that's another way to get financing from family members who have the money to do so. Folks, we are at the halfway point, and we're talking with Dave Elowich of Elowich 3 LLC. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shondi Gray. It is 6:30 and 63 with cloudy skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight is going to be more showers, low 53. Thursday, 50% showers, high 59. Thursday night, low around 41. And for your Friday, partly sunny, high 57. Friday night, mostly clear, low 35. And for Saturday, sunny, high 52. Saturday night, low 36. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Seabird.
Thank you, Shondi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to us, and we'll do our best to answer. 610-758-8810. Dave, let's talk a little bit more about some of the other benefits. Earlier, you had mentioned, you know, long-term appreciation. And I know in the real estate world, quite often the questions we ask, even when people talk about refinancing, we'll say, well, how long do you plan to hold the property? Or people say, should I sell? Well, you know, what's the timeline for your next purchase? That type of thing. So let's talk about the long-term appreciation and some of the other benefits you might see to real estate investing.
Well, you know, a lot of times when we look at the do-it-yourselfer financial plans, or the people who, you know, worked out their retirement on the back of a napkin, they get, you know, and they're fine the first couple years. They get 5 or 10 years into retirement and, you know, realize something's gone wrong. You know, there's too much a month left when whatever their income streams they've been planning on dry up. And that is a function of inflation. And a way that I get my clients, it's a subtle thing, and if you're not trained in the importance of dealing with this, you may not really be aware of it. But if you think back to what a stamp cost the first time that you bought one, and where it costs now, that is a function of inflation by law. Mm-hmm. And I think my first stamp when I was a kid was like 19 cents, and that's more than doubled.
Mm-hmm.
That is a reality that any effective sound retirement plan has to address, and real estate can be great at addressing inflation. You can and should in leasing and in your lease agreements and as you're shopping things, there should be rent elevators that ensure your rent is keeping up with inflation. That on top of the fact that generally the appreciation of the real estate will maintain its value at a rate, and if not faster than inflation. So it can really protect you from the dilution in buying power that can happen over time as a result of inflation.
It's so funny, Dave, because I think a lot of times I'll hear people say, well, you know, no, I haven't raised it because they're such good tenants. But they don't realize the impact on the value of the real estate that is used in valuing that real estate for, you know, when you go to sell it.
And it's also, I mean, that's a huge point that, you know, if your rent rolls are lower than they could be, that's going to be a very big factor when a buyer goes and calculates how much they're willing to buy an asset from you. And the other thing, and this is something that, you know, folks have learned from experience, and this I'm just telling you, these are the conversations that I've had. If you set that expectation, if it's in that lease and it's not, oh, if you're nice to me and you pay on time, I'm not going to raise your rent. But if I really, you know, if you give me a lot of headache and I'm sending a plumber in at midnight, then I'm going to raise it. Mm-hmm. That's not a way to operate a business.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just say, it's like, we rate, you know, your rent is X and it's going to increase by 3% every year because mm-hmm. our costs are going to increase.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, and we want to make sure that this property is something that you want to continue to live in.
That's great advice. Not only continue to live in, but that we need to continue to maintain it, and they should appreciate that as well.
Absolutely. It's one of those, and there are many, you know, smaller factors to consider. Once you go from, real estate might be a great idea for me to consider and use in my financial life, then there's all the questions of, well, how do I do it well? What are the questions I know to ask, and who can help ask the questions I don't know to ask?
Mm-hmm. And not make it the only thing you count on either. Back to what we talked about at the top of the show, where we talked about a diverse portfolio, because there could always be elements that we can't foresee, such as if you're getting into vacation rentals, which could be very different than the residential rental. A vacation rental could be relying on tourist activity, you know, beach property. People aren't going there in the winter necessarily. And then we have things like a pandemic. So it is part of the diversified portfolio, and you want to make sure it's not something that you absolutely, you know, can't see through a season or two. Just like when we talk to investors, you have to have your emergency reserve. You have to have maybe a couple years worth of, you know, cash flow needs for, you know, unexpected or planned goals or big expenditures or something a little bit more conservative, so that you can see through the volatility in the market. And the same thing kind of applies with real estate, I would say, as well.
I would agree with you completely, and kind of what you're getting at in with this analogy to, you know, more of our traditional stock and bond portfolio is, well, what are the risks you need to be aware of in a stock and bond portfolio? Similarly, it's important to be aware of and prepared for the risks that real estate investing can carry, because they are different.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk about some of the risks and cautions?
Absolutely. Okay. I think that, you know, the first one I would think in mind is, or keep in mind, particularly if you're using financing, is how are you going to pay for the debt service? Is it going to be 100% covered by your rent? And if that's the only way that you can make whatever mortgage payment or debt that you have on the asset, well, what happens if you get a call from your tenant that says, "Hey, I just lost my job. Can you spot me for a month?"
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't evict them and get a new tenant in a month. It takes more time than that, even if you're not willing to allow them to do that. So you have to make sure that you have sufficient capital on the side if there is an interruption in the cash flow. And there's a term that real estate investors use and include in their calculations, which is their vacancy rate.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically will say, well, what percentage of the time will I not have a cash flow? And that's really the number you got to base your cash flow in. And maybe, you know, maybe it's just 5% or 10%. But what do you, you know, how often is your real estate going to turn over from the tenant standpoint?
Mm-hmm.
And how long is it going to take you to replace that tenant?
Mm-hmm.
And once you understand that, then the question is, well, where am I going to go when that interruption happens? If I have debt on this property,
mm-hmm.
this is one of those places that first-time investors, early investors, can really get into trouble, because they can really stretch. Say, you know what, I I heard the seminar, or I went to this thing, and real estate's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and I really want to buy that first property. Mm-hmm. And I go and I find that first property, and it's at the very top end of my budget, and I'm going to put all of my available cash into acquiring it and fixing it up and getting it ready for rent. If anything goes wrong in the first year that you own that, you got some real problems. Mm-hmm. Whether it's an interruption to the cash flow from your tenants, or the call that you got to repair the boiler, whatever it may be, it's really important to understand how you're going to address interruption in income and unexpected expenses.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay, and I mentioned the boiler going. Houses need repairs. What's your budget for repairs? What's reasonable? What do you think you're going to spend every year? What's the highest you would anticipate? And when that comes, how and where are you going to, get the money to pay for those things? And if you have tenants, these things have to be addressed quickly.
And that goes back to then the original purchase when you're planning the debt service. You might want to give a little bit more wiggle room in there for yourself for those types of unexpected things if you don't have that capital already set up. You might be walking into a property that you thought you weren't going to have a lot of repairs. Maybe it looked like it was fixed, and all of a sudden something, still comes up.
And I think that, that speaks to why it's important. Investment real estate is very different than buying something you're going to live in.
Mm.
My wife and I just moved within the last year. We want a little bit of a bigger house for the kids and a yard, and we went right to the top of my budget. And as a CFP, that's emotional. That's kind of like a hard thing to do with the rational part of my brain.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the house that my kids are going to grow up in. We're going to be here for a long time. If we overpaid by $10,000 or $20,000, it's not that big a deal over a 30-year period that we're paying the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
In the investment side, your profit, most successful real estate investors will tell you your profit is made or lost on the purchase price. And if you get emotional on an investment property, you will likely pay too much, which means your debt service is too high, and your chance of actually making money and being successful with it goes down. So it's really important to understand the numbers of what you view for success, whether you're looking on an overall cash-on-cash return, you're looking on a cash flow yield, however you're going to analyze it. The decision to buy an investment property should be a rational decision, not because it feels good or you're really impatient to get into real estate investing.
Right, and don't overestimate your ability to go in and do all the repairs and improvements. A lot of people think, I can do that, and then they find out, whoops, put the wrong wire in the wrong place. You mentioned that you just bought a home, and I've heard from a lot of people that the market is going crazy right now. People are in bidding wars with other folks, so I hope you got in before that started happening. But I've even noticed it in looking for homes for a couple friends. I look at real estate all the time, and every time I see something that looks good, it's pending. So as soon as they go up, they're selling. So do you see any concerns in the current real estate market?
That is such a broad question. If you had asked me that at 6 o'clock, we could have spent an hour on that question alone. The real estate market in the Lehigh Valley has been kind of crazy for a while. The supply has been so small relative to demand, even before the pandemic. Realtors that I was talking to, we have a ton of buyers, but we don't have any inventory. Things would go up on the MLS and they'd be down a week and a half later. I think largely, it was driven, in my perspective, in two reasons. We still had, at the start of the year, even though the Fed had started ticking interest rates up a little bit, we still had historically low interest rates. That really does support a strong real estate market. we were in the tail end of the strongest bull market in history. Mm-hmm. People were doing well. They were optimistic. They had resources, so that was driving it. So things were really tight. We actually, so again, something that you wouldn't do as an investor, my wife and I, we knew two neighborhoods that we wanted to buy in because we were not willing to sacrifice the elementary school that we go to.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing on the MLS. We got it, from, networking, knocking on doors, and the house that we bought never got listed.
Mm.
We have a neighbor who will say to us sometimes, I always think you're renting because I never saw the for sale sign.
Mm.
And that's happening all over the valley, that kind of thing. What's driving that since the spring? Now, remember, in Pennsylvania, real estate was not considered an essential business. So real estate transactions were... they were disabled. Nothing was transacting.
Mm-hmm.
And since that time, you've had a lot of flight from New York City, North Jersey, Philadelphia, Philly suburbs, to folks who are saying, now I can, I can telecommute to my job. I don't want to be in the city. These are people who have a lot of assets to play with, and you're seeing them. They're getting into these bidding wars. They're offering, all cash for $500,000 houses. They're buying things sight unseen, understanding that, if I have a six-figure repair bill, but I just sold my million-dollar apartment in New York, what do I care? And that's really driving it. If I recall your instruction to me at the outset, we're coming up on a break,
yes.
So I don't want to walk past the risks associated with that, but probably we should wait a minute or two.
Okay, we'll come back to that after this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810 or through yourfinancialchoices.com. We've been speaking with Dave Elowich of Elowich 3 LLC. Back in a moment.
Are you interested in inspiring and informing future generations through WDIY's programming? A gift through your will, retirement plan, or estate plan is a wonderful legacy to leave to those that will need a trusted place to hear what's going on in the world. For information about naming WDIY as a beneficiary, please call 610-694-8100 or visit wdiy.org/legacy.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And I have David Elowich with me. Dave is a CFP professional at financial advisor at Elowich 3 LLC. Dave, how do people reach you? Do you have a phone number or a website?
Oh, sure. Thanks for asking. The office number is 610-295-5909, and our website is elowich3.com, and it's the number 3.
Okay, and Elowich is like W-I-T-C-H at the end, like Halloween, Elowich.
That's it. Yes.
Elowich3.com, 610-295-5909. Thanks, because you're doing a great job talking about real estate tonight. And if people have questions, we're kind of getting to the last, 12 minutes here. But questions can also be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com, and I'd be happy to forward that to Dave as well. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I think it's just so interesting listening to Dave. To you, Dave, you do such a great job, and I just love having you back on the show. So let's finish up our conversation on the real estate. So we were talking about the tight market right now, and how that does play into the prices. Any other concerns or?
I think, and you had asked about the risks related to this moment, and I think they're numerous and really warrant attention. This kind of tight buyer's market has bid up our properties locally to be really high. And there's this question of are property values in the Lehigh Valley just too high? And at what point will they come back to earth, which would mean that you would lose the value of the appreciation, at least for a period of time, where you know, what's going on, you know, there's been a lot of reporting about the difference between the real economy on Main Street. We all know too many people who are out of work, too many small businesses that are closing. We haven't seen that really shake out in foreclosures, in large-scale numbers of businesses that can't pay their rent, resulting in property owners that can't pay their mortgage. And there's a real concern that as that plays out, the asset values may lose value if all of a sudden people can't cover their debt service and the banks are foreclosing.
Mm-hmm.
Now I will tell you, I have this conversation with real estate professionals in all areas of that business, people who are Manhattan-based, people who are local in the Lehigh Valley, people who are more involved in economic development, and I hear opinions on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
I can, you know, we can pull out my phone and call someone who's going to lay out five macroeconomic reasons why everything's going to be fine, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can call someone up who's going to say we have, you know, imminent doom and gloom, there's a huge bubble, and we haven't felt the shoe drop.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I'm a little bit more bearish. I think, unfortunately, we have a bit more pain we're going to have to go through in many sectors of our economy before we get back to, you know, whatever our next normal or post-pandemic normal is.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means from a real estate investing standpoint is you want to be really cautious that you're not overpaying, either now or into the future.
Mm-hmm.
When you're thinking about your tenants, you want to make sure they have the financial wherewithal to continue paying you.
Right.
You know, what? It's not just, it's not just can I get the deal with the bank, it's then is it going to be a cash-flowing property? And one of the most successful Allentown-based real estate investors that I ever spoke with had a really insightful comment. He said, you know, I take really good care of my properties and my tenants because if you think about it, they all work for me.
Mm.
Because I receive anywhere between 5 and 20% of their salary.
Wow.
I want them to be happy and I want them to keep their jobs.
I love that. That was good advice. And some of what you were saying kind of goes back to that the profit loss is made on the purchase price. So, you know, what you're walking into, just be careful. And there could be little nuggets, even in the Lehigh Valley when all the other prices, you know, are run up. There could be nuggets that people could find. So, you know, just proceed with caution.
Right. And the point I would add to that also, the other thing that's driving it is really low interest rates. So your budget should not, whether it's an investment property or someplace you're buying, it shouldn't be dictated by what a bank is willing to loan you. It should be dictated by what you can afford and what's profitable.
Oh, good point. That's even in buying, your principal
Absolutely.
Residence as well. We had a caller, Carolyn from Sailorsburg, who called and asked, how do you feel about the necessity of title insurance? Can you speak to that in your capacity?
My perspective is that it's essential.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting about title insurance, when it was explained to me, it's very different from any other kind of insurance because it actually insures against things that may have happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Any other type of insurance is protecting about some future events. Title insurance says that if it turns out that you bought a property from someone who doesn't actually own it,
mm-hmm.
you are indemnified if the true owner comes and takes that asset away from you. And the way that works is when you buy the title insurance, what the title company is doing, the title agent and their searchers, they're looking at property records and history to ensure that the seller has free and clear title and has permission to transfer the asset to you. So it feels like a transfer. It's one of those things, and I'll even put legal expenses into this category. You know, why do I need to work with a lawyer to write up my will? I'll just go to LegalZoom.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like an expense without value. But the protection that it provides, if heaven forbid something goes sideways, is tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and it's also about asking those questions you don't know have to be asked. And I agree, going backwards with the title insurance, I worked at a law firm for 9 years with doing estate and trust work. And I recall the attorney said, in the past, there could have been an heir who couldn't be found. And if at some point they could be found, it could impact this. So that title insurance, you know, was going to help against that. Dave, we have about 5 minutes left before we wrap things up. And I know that, you know, we could go on talking for some time about this. What are some of the kind of final points you want to add? I know for one thing, I've had people ask questions like, you know, can I buy real estate in my IRA? And I'm just going to say right now, for me, that is a very hard call to make, because there's something called prohibited transactions. And similar to your discussion that we touched on 1031 exchanges, how careful you have to be, the same thing applies with IRAs. So that is, you know, very, very strict in that regard. Sometimes people will think they can buy real estate and rent it to their kids and get all these benefits that we talked about. And that is not necessarily the case either, because if it is not, what's the word, arm's length transaction and fair rent, fair market value for the rent, then it's deemed to be personal, whether it's to a friend or a child. If you're giving someone a great, great deal below fair market value, that hinders, you know, the kinds of deductions you can take. So there's a lot of other details behind all of this that we haven't been able to address. Tonight, the show is talking about kind of awareness and a little bit of education around it. And I think that we have demonstrated through our discussion this evening that this isn't something someone just goes into and makes a split, you know, second decision on. The chances for success are in the effort that you put into it and the effort you put into understanding it. So with the next a few minutes, Dave, I want to make sure that you kind of, you know, address any other things that you think are outstanding.
Sure. And it's interesting you ask about the self-directed IRAs. I actually this afternoon received compliance approval on a white paper that I wrote about, you know, when and how to use self-directed IRAs for real estate. So if folks want to reach out through the website or, you know, through your financial choices, I'm happy to share that now that I'm allowed to.
And if you share it on LinkedIn, I can share it on LinkedIn as well.
I will put that, you know what, I will put that up in short order so that you can, yeah, share it that way.
Okay.
I think the piece there, as important as it is to have guidance and professional advice in real estate, using a self-directed IRA, you want to do it with a custodian that understands it. You want to go through a lender that understands it if you're going to use it. But frankly, the best way to be in the real estate space inside of an IRA is when you're acting as the bank. If you find yourself in a situation where you want to make make loans or be the hard money lender, doing that avoids a substantial amount of the risks inside of an IRA, there's no tax trade-off when you do that, because you lose some taxes in direct real estate is one of the directly held real estate inside of an IRA is one of the things that you lose in that standpoint. I think the broader concept, and this is true from my perspective in all financial planning, if you're going to make real estate part of your portfolio, it's important to understand why, what's the goal, what are you trying to achieve, and when. And then you have a ton of how questions. How are you going to finance it? How are you going to manage the property? Are you going to pay for a property manager? Who's going to help you identify and learn how to run the math on what is a good deal and what is a bad deal? Which assets on your balance sheet are you going to put towards this, and how much risk do you want to take in that space? And oftentimes, you know, I find, and I don't know if you have this in your tax practice, folks oftentimes are loath to pay professional fees. They just seem like cost without value. But there's a lot of value that can be given from the advice of people who have been there before, understand how the IRS looks at a number of issues related to, you know, owning real estate, and, you know, can help you run the numbers.
Right. Right. I agree. Anything else on that?
Well, that's. I guess I wrapped up too quickly with that.
No, you're great, Dave. You're great. Well, the thing is, if we go on to one more subject, we'll really run over time. But I have so appreciated having you here tonight, folks. We've been talking with David Elowich, who is a CFP professional and financial advisor at Elowich 3 LLC, and we've been talking about the considerations in real estate. Dave has recently authored an article on real estate investing through an IRA. Is that correct, Dave?
Yeah. Okay. Really looking at you know, that really addresses, it lays out what are the rules. And you know what? We should make a point on this. We have another moment.
We have about 30 seconds.
If you blow up your IRA because of, you break the rules on self-directed real estate, mm-hmm. the tax consequences are tremendously bad.
Okay.
It's a very bad mistake.
Right. So we have to read the article.
Exactly. There's that, and there's a, you know, mine I think is the best one that's out there, but there's many resources if you research this.
Okay. And Dave, if people want to reach you, the number is
610-295-5909.
And your website?
Elowich 3, Elowich, the number 3.com.
Thank you so much, Dave. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks. Great talking to you.
Okay. Folks, thank you, Lori. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, listeners. Next week, I'm going to cover more special circumstances in financial planning because there are so many. I did that last week, and I think I have more to share, more special circumstances in financial planning. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.